Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Today, we're diving deep into ancient Egypt. You know, one of history's most, well, iconic and enduring civilizations.
Absolutely legendary.
But we're not just looking at the pyramids or trying to decipher hieroglyphs today. We're asking something maybe more fundamental. How connected were these huge ancient civilizations, really?
Right. Did people mostly stay put within their borders? Or were they moving around, mixing, shaping history in ways we're maybe only just starting to glimpse through genetics?
Exactly. For thousands of years, ancient Egypt thrived. We all know the images, incredible architecture, sophisticated culture.
And for a long time, the, let's say, prevailing idea was that its people were largely local, you know, not much genetic input from outside.
But here's the snag. Getting ancient DNA out of Egypt, it's been incredibly difficult.
Yeah, the conditions, the heat, the humidity, they're just terrible for preserving DNA. So despite all the archaeology, there's been this huge gap in understanding the genetics of the earliest Egyptians.
A frustrating gap. But what if? What if just one discovery, one person, preserved in a really unique way, could change everything?
A genetic key almost.
Yeah. What if their DNA revealed connections far beyond what we'd assumed? Connections that could reshape how we see one of history's greatest civilizations.
Well, that's pretty much exactly what we're talking about today, a genuinely groundbreaking finding.
Let's get into it.
Okay, first off, we really need to give a shout out to the researchers here. This was a major international effort.
Absolutely. Today we celebrate the fantastic work of a dedicated team, including lead authors Adeline Morris-Jacobs, Jodie Irish, Pontus Skoglund, Linus Girdland Flink, and their many colleagues.
They're from institutions like Liverpool, John Moores University, the Francis Crick Institute, Cardiff University, a really strong collaboration.
And what they've done is truly advance our understanding of ancient Egyptian population history.
How? They managed to sequence the very first whole genome from an Old Kingdom Egyptian individual.
The first whole genome. That's huge for this time period.
It really is. Just to give everyone a bit of context, the dynastic period in Egypt, we're talking roughly 3150 to 30 BCE, millennia history.
Pyramids, pharaohs, incredible stability.
Exactly. And the Old Kingdom, specifically 2686 to 2125 BCE, that's the era of the first step pyramid, the Great Pyramid of Giza. Foundational stuff.
Okay, so the traditional view, as you said, was mostly local origins, pretty isolated genetically.
That was the thinking for a long time. But, you know, archaeology has been dropping hints for a while.
Like what?
Well, evidence of extensive trade networks across the Fertile Crescent going way back 6th millennium BCE. Even.
Wow, that early.
Yeah, and these weren't just casual contacts. They brought big innovations to Egypt, domesticated animals, plants, maybe even writing systems from Mesopotamia, from the Sumerians.
And things like the pottery wheel too, right? That wasn't necessarily invented in Egypt.
Precisely. So lots of cultural exchange was evident, but the genetics, that was the missing piece.
Because getting DNA was so hard.
Extremely hard. Previous attempts, they sometimes got fragments, maybe some mitochondrial DNA or partial nuclear DNA, but usually from much, much later periods. We're talking thousands of years after the Old Kingdom.
So the genetics of those early pyramid builders remained a mystery.
Largely, yes. And that's the gap this study aimed to fill.
So how did they succeed where others struggled? What was different this time?
It really comes down to the sample. They focused on an adult male who was excavated at a site called Nuerat.
Okay.
And crucially, radiocarbon dating placed him right between 2855 and 2570 BCE. That's slap bang in the transition from the early dynastic to the Old Kingdom period.
Perfect timing. But what about the preservation?
Ah, that's the key. This individual wasn't just buried in the ground. He was placed inside a large ceramic pot, which is then put inside a rock-cut tomb.
Inside a pot? Like sealed?
Seems like it created a kind of microenvironment, protected the remains, and crucially, the DNA from the worst of the degradation, like a little time capsule.
Incredible. So that unique burial was the breakthrough.
It seems very likely. It allowed them to do something unprecedented for this period. Sequence a whole genome.
Not just fragments, the whole thing.
At 2x coverage, which means they read each position about twice, giving decent confidence. A first for Old Kingdom Egypt.
How did they actually get the DNA out and sequence it?
They used some clever lab techniques. Extracting DNA from the cementum of teeth, that's a layer that often preserves DNA better than bone.
Okay.
And they prepared special single-stranded DNA libraries, which can be better for damaged DNA than sequenced using standard Illumina technology.
But how do they know it's genuinely ancient DNA, not modern contamination? That's always a risk,
It's an
right?
absolutely critical question. They performed rigorous authentication checks.
Like what?
Looking for characteristic damage patterns, ancient DNA has specific chemical changes, like cytosine bases turning into thymine, especially at the ends of fragments. They found those patterns. Plus, they estimated contamination levels for modern humans, both in the nuclear and mitochondrial DNA, and found them to be very low. So they're confident this is the real deal.
Okay, so the DNA was good, but they looked at more than just the genetics, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, it was a really holistic approach. We mentioned the radiocarbon dating. Then osteology studying the bones.
What did the bones tell them?
He was male, about 157 to 160 centimeters tall, so not particularly tall for the time. He lived to a pretty good age, maybe 44 to 64 years old.
That's quite old for that period.
It is. And interestingly, despite the burial suggesting some status, his skeleton showed signs of hard physical work, osteoarthritis, things like that.
So maybe a craftsman, a potter, perhaps, given the pot burial.
It's possible. It paints a picture, doesn't it? They also did isotope analysis on his teeth.
What does that show?
It gives clues about diet and where someone grew up. His isotopes indicated he grew up right there in the Nile Valley's hot, dry climate.
Okay, so he was local in that sense.
In terms of where he spent his childhood, yes. And his diet was pretty typical Egyptian fare: omnivorous, wheat, barley, some animal protein, maybe even Nile fish.
Fascinating detail. Okay, so back to the main event, the genetics. What tools did they use to analyze his ancestry?
They used a standard toolkit for population genetics, things like principal component analysis or PCA, which helps visualize genetic relationships between populations.
Great.
Also, admixture analysis, which models an individual's genome as a mix of different ancestral components. And QPDM, another method for testing and quantifying ancestry proportions from different source populations.
So standard tools, but applied to this unique ancient Egyptian genome. What did they find? What's the big reveal about his ancestry?
This is where it gets really interesting. The analysis showed his ancestry wasn't simple at all. It was a
A
mix.
mix, okay.
The majority, about 77.6%, clusters closest to North African Neolithic populations. Specifically, it looks quite similar to genomes they've recovered from a middle Neolithic site in Morocco.
Okay, so that fits with the idea of local North African roots continuing from earlier periods.
Exactly. It suggests significant continuity within North Africa into Egypt. That part wasn't totally unexpected, maybe.
But there's a but, isn't there?
There's a big but. The remaining 22.4%, roughly, couldn't be explained by North African ancestry alone.
So where did it come from?
The models point strongly towards the Eastern Fertile Crescent. We're talking Mesopotamia, the Levant, Anatolia region.
Wow. Over a fifth of his ancestry from that Far East during the Old Kingdom.
Yes, genetically similar to ancestry found in places like Anatolia and the Levant during the Neolithic and Bronze Age. And crucially, no single source population could explain his genome. It was definitively a mix.
That's quite something. So it wasn't just pots and ideas traveling, but people too. Significant numbers of people, it sounds like.
That's what this genetic evidence directly implies. It suggests that the connections between Egypt and the Eastern Fertile Crescent involved actual human migration, contributing genetically to the early Egyptian population.
It really turns that isolated Egypt idea on its head for the Old Kingdom.
It certainly challenges it very directly. People were moving, bringing their genes along with cultural innovations.
Did the study look beyond this one individual? Did they compare him to later Egyptians?
Yes, they did. They compared his genome to previously published data from later periods in Egypt and also to modern Egyptians.
What did that show? Any shifts over time?
Definitely. By the third intermediate period, so maybe 700-500 BCE, there's a noticeable increase in ancestry related to the Bronze Age Levant. In some models, it goes up to nearly 65%.
A huge jump. What could explain that?
Well, it might be linked to known historical events, things like the proposed Canaanite expansion during the Bronze Age, or maybe the period of Hyksos rule in Egypt, who came from the Levant. It suggests more waves of interaction and migration.
So the genetic story of Egypt wasn't static even after the Old Kingdom. And what about today? How do modern Egyptians fit in?
Modern Egyptian genetics are, as you might expect, even more complex, a real mosaic.
Made up of
ancestry related to groups like the Nuera individual and those Neolithic Moroccans that makes up a chunk, maybe 30 to 75%. Then there's the Bronze Age Levant component, maybe 12 to 57%.
Okay.
But also significant contributions from more recent migrations. Sub-Saharan Africa features prominently ancestry related to East Africans, like the ancient Ethiopian Moda genome, makes up perhaps 7 to 56%.
Wow, that's a huge range.
It varies. And also West African-related ancestry, maybe 5 to 52%. It shows a long history of connections and movements across the continent and beyond, shaping the population we see today.
A truly dynamic genetic history. So, stepping back, what are the big implications of this study?
Well, first, it proves it can be done. We can get ancient whole genomes from early dynastic Egypt if the preservation conditions are right. That pot burial might be a clue for finding more samples.
Yeah, it opens a door that seemed pretty firmly shut.
Absolutely. Second, as we've discussed, it seriously challenges the idea of early Egypt being genetically isolated. It provides strong evidence for human migration alongside the spread of things like farming the Neolithic package.
So people moving brought those changes, at least in part.
It looks that way. The Nuera genome is a concrete piece of evidence supporting older ideas based on skeletal and dental shapes that hinted at links to both North Africa and West Asia.
It connects those dots.
It does. And comparing him to later Egyptians highlights this continuous interplay between local continuity and new migrations over millennia. It wasn't one or the other. It was both.
Of course, we have to remember this is still just one genome, right?
Crucial limitation. Yes. This one individual from Nuera might not represent everyone in the Old Kingdom across all of Egypt. We can't overgeneralize.
So what's needed next?
More genomes, many more. From different places in Egypt, different time periods, different social contexts, if possible. That's the only way to build a truly detailed picture.
This is a fantastic start, but really just the beginning of rewriting that genetic history.
Exactly. It's a hugely important baseline, a proof of concept.
So if we had to boil it down, what's the key take-home message here?
I'd say it's this. The first whole genome from Old Kingdom Egypt reveals a surprisingly complex ancestry. It shows the foundational population wasn't isolated, but was a mixture of local North African heritage and a significant previously hidden genetic link to the distant Eastern Fertile Crescent.
A hidden connection brought to light.
Precisely.
And that really makes you think, doesn't it? What does this discovery, the more connected view of the ancient world, mean for how we understand the spread of cultures, technologies, maybe even ideas? How do these ancient groups really interact to build the civilizations we study?
It opens up so many new questions. A really exciting time for the field.
Definitely something to ponder. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this analysis, the best way to support Base by Base is to subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. It only takes a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.